Community Bank, committed to the community, committed to you.
WISR now presents It's Your Turn with Dave Malarkey. Dave is off today, so we have a special guest host. It's Your Turn is Butler County's only live call-in talk show. You can join in the conversation by calling 724-283-2525. And now, let's join It's Your Turn and today's special guest host.
Welcome, welcome, welcome. Good afternoon. Tracy Morgan back in here with you so we can take over Dave's show for another day or two. He's going to be off again tomorrow, so appreciate you being here. You can call in if you want, but I think I'm going to like hog up the time today because we're talking food. Remember when I subbed for Dave? It would have been around Thanksgiving, right, Pat? Because we were talking food and holiday food and, you know, what do you make for your Thanksgiving and all of that. So we're going to just keep on the theme for this day. Because I know you're getting ready for Christmas and you're going to be looking at what table settings do you need and how do you make a great party and what food. I have a solution. You could just get a caterer to do it. That's my solution. But I know I'm going to have to cook for myself. So we're going to talk about what makes a good dinner party or just what makes a good meal. Do you have a favorite recipe that you would like to be able to make? I wanted to sneak in the chop shop in here because I'm one of those that attempts to make a meal. And as soon as anything is said in my household, like, oh, mom was experimenting. Oh, I hear the grief. Hear the grief. Sometimes they like it. Sometimes they don't. So I'm going to be asking Bill Adkinson from the chop shop about meals that we can make, whether it's professionally made or it's just something simple that we can make at home to be able to get through the holidays. So we'll do that. And we're going to do that for the first about a half hour or so. And then around 1 o'clock, we'll take a couple breaks in there, too. So around 1 o'clock, I'm going to be talking to Bishop David Zupik. So if you're a Catholic in the area and you've been told about the mergers, and, of course, in Butler we have that the grouping of churches, but not necessarily merged yet, we're going to be talking about that. Now, their latest announcement is about, I do believe, 28 parishes, I think, and they're going to be creating 8 new ones. But that's not going to happen until January 6th. Now, we are not in that merged group yet. Okay, so I say that because we're talking places like McKees Rocks and Robinson and Monroeville and Penn Hills and Cecil, McKeesport, East End, you know, so I know it's Pittsburgh, but it's still worth a good conversation because Butler will likely see these mergers. And so we're going to talk to the bishop and also Linda Ritzert, and we're going to talk to the Diocese of Pittsburgh again. That'll be in about a half an hour. So we'll do that here in a minute. All right, that's the show today. I know it's cold, so just bundle up and let's just talk food and enjoy it for a while. Bill is here with the Chop Shop. Bill, it's nice to see you. I'm so glad you're in. I'm giddy.
Hi, Tracy. I'm glad to be here. Thanks for having me.
I'm one of those people who love the cooking shows, whether they're the reality that, you know, they get kicked off the show or, you know, you just get told how you make something. But I can't ever replicate it. I can never replicate it. What got you into what you do now?
Well, my first job was working in a restaurant by my house. I grew up in Meridian.
Okay.
So I lived 4 houses away from JD's Pub, which then turned into W. Rick's.
Right, right.
So my first job was washing dishes at JD's Pub. And got in there, and about 6 months after I started working there, it got sold. So, you know, just trying to make some extra money.
Right,
you know,
yeah, yeah.
Being 16 and needing to buy a car and all that. So simple, walk to work, you know. So I'm in there washing dishes, and I'd get bored, and just washing dishes isn't hard. And I'd watch the cooks making food. So then it got to the point where, you know, you'd get hungry, and none of the cooks want to cook for you after cooking for how many hours,
right.
So you'd be like, hey, can I have something to eat? And they'd say,
here's a cereal bowl.
Have at it, you know. Right. And then so you just start, you know,
putting
some things together. And
now along this journey of yours from that point until where you are now, I know you went to school, right, for this culinary school. Did you have anybody that came along your side just to say, I know you have these skills, let me teach you how to do X, Y, and Z?
No, not really. It just kind of happened. It was there, you know, I got interested in starting to cook things because you don't want to wash dishes for a long time.
Right, yeah.
Like it's all right, it's fun, but it looked like the guys cooking the food were having a lot more fun than I was over there,
right.
You know, in the dishes. So I wanted to do what I could to have more fun. So I started watching them, and, you know, turnover in restaurants is high. So eventually one day a bunch of people didn't show up for work, and they were shorthanded. So the guy who was running the kitchen at the time needed a solution and told
– And you were it.
He told Rick. He
you
said,
were it, yeah.
He said he can do some of this, so yeah. Let him come over here, you know. Technically, I probably shouldn't have been over there because I was still pretty young. I was only 16.
Okay.
So there were a lot of things that I wasn't really allowed to use equipment-wise, meat slicers, things like that.
But that was a part of your journey.
It was.
And you've gotten to where you are now.
It was. So they gave me a shot, and
I
did all right, and I kept, you know, they let me stay over there, and so
yeah,
did that all through high school and didn't know what I really wanted to do whenever I got out of high school. I knew I didn't like sitting at a desk.
Right.
So I said, well, I might as well go and learn how to cook a little bit better because no matter where I go, I can find a job.
Yeah, and that's the truth.
And that way, when I finally decide what I wanted to do when I grew up, at least I had something that I could support myself with until then. But I just kept getting further and further into it and never left the business.
And I love the Chop Shop. I really do. And I'm glad that you put it together the way that you did. And we'll talk holidays in a second. I just want to make sure that I ask you about the Chop Shop because I never get to talk to you and you're here today. Because when I go into the Chop Shop, it's laid out so uniquely. And it's one of those restaurants that I always think, oh, well, I would run into this kind of restaurant if I were on vacation. And yet we forget that we have these kinds of places right here in this area. And so it's just a unique space. How did you go about decorating it as you do on the walls? You have a lot of car, automobile-related items.
Yeah, a lot of that stuff was stuff I collected prior to ever opening the shop. My family has always been interested in cars and things like that. From the time I was little, you know, my dad would fix our family cars.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we were at a point where we had one family car for a long time, and when we got a second family car, he bought an old Pontiac Grand Prix that had the engine blown up in it. And
the boats. Yeah. I always called them the boats. Yeah. Yeah.
And I still drive almost every car I own is ridiculously large.
Have they gone up or are they just still
both.
Wide?
Okay. Both. But, you know, I've been into that since I was little. He would be fixing cars in the garage. I'd be in the garage playing. And, you know, my job was to hand him whatever he asked for while I was playing.
Right.
So just kind of inherited that from him and was always interested in it. And as I came across, you know, old signs and things like that, I would just collect them and they'd go in my basement or in my garage. And whenever we got to the point where we were opening up the shop, I thought, I have all these things. I'd kind of like to put them somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
And with the budget that I was working with, opening up the Chop Shop, it was really tight. You know, I was taking a big chance because everything I had was in that place. So I didn't have a big budget to redo a lot of like the seating and the tables and the chairs at first. So everything in that building came from another restaurant. We would go and we'd tear out booths and tables and chairs and refinish them and put them in. So the Chop Shop was actually kind of a chop shop of other restaurants.
Yeah.
So I thought all that kind of tied together. So, you know, the Chop Shop with the car stuff and the Chop Shop with piecing and parting this restaurant together. That's just kind of how it happened.
And I'm glad that you're sharing that with us because everything that somebody puts together, there's a history behind. But this history is a part of your own life. It's a part of your own journey where between the cooking aspect of what you do and your catering, and we'll talk about that here in a second, and the Chop Shop itself, it's all a part of you.
Yeah.
It's your life.
Yeah, I mean, I also was fortunate when I was at school. We had a facilities planning class.
Okay.
So my instructor in that class had actually just opened up his own restaurant in Williamsport at the
time. Okay, yeah.
And the restaurant he opened in Williamsport, which if you've never been to Williamsport, it's like if you just picked Butler up and moved it into the middle of the state, it's exactly the same.
So we have a sister
same.
City.
It's exactly the same.
Okay.
Williamsport was built on manufacturing and railroads, and when that manufacturing aspect started to dwindle,
you had to reinvent yourself
right,
a little bit.
Exactly,
yeah.
Like yeah. Butler, same everything. So this guy opened up a restaurant that would have been trendy in New York, where he was from at the time,
mm-hmm.
in Williamsport. And so you're looking at it like, why?
It's just a little different
right.
for the area, yeah.
But what he told us and what made a lot of sense was, if you're going to open up your own place and it's going to be a place that you're going to be at 12, 16 hours a day, he said, it has to reflect your personality. He said, if it doesn't, chances are people aren't going to identify with it.
Right, right.
He said, you've got a 50-50 shot of making it, so at least make it being you. He said, if you're generic, he's like, you're not going to last. Doesn't matter, if you got decent food, if you've got really great service, if it's a generic place, people aren't going to identify with it. They're not going to come back. So that's kind of what we ended up doing. Chop Shop was, we put it out there and
different, unique.
It was just kind of a reflection of the things that I was interested in. And,
right. And it seems like when you're talking about the reinvention of a town because of that dwindle, if you will, it seems like when I grew up around here, it was through a naive kid saying, well, there's nothing to do around here.
Yeah.
Now that I'm at this age, which we won't say how old, but now that I'm here, it's a matter of you can't fit everything in a weekend. And I think the county has reinvented itself to be able to, especially with Butler County Tourism Bureau, we talk to them all the time here at the station, and I always give them kudos for helping that reinvention, if you will, and for us to be able to celebrate things that we know are here. And so it seems like you're a part of that reinvention period for Butler County.
Yeah, I never really thought about that whenever we started. That wasn't a goal.
Mm-hmm.
It was just, honestly, I just didn't want to work for anybody else anymore.
All right, nothing wrong with that.
But looking back on it now, the Chop Shop has been a big catalyst for Main Street, at least.
Right, yeah.
Part of the goal whenever you are trying to revitalize an area, and I tell everybody this when they ask, you look at the two things that start to revitalize an area where it used to be a very big commercial hub, and it's arts and entertainment. Almost every time, you look at Lawrenceville, it's restaurants, it's music.
Right.
It's,
that's the place to be now if you're in Pittsburgh.
Right. Because those things drive foot traffic. You can't get retailers until you get foot traffic.
Right.
You're not going to pull in big national retailers into main streets anymore. There's too many tax breaks. It's too convenient to build a shopping center with a huge parking lot. So the way that downtowns are coming back around and surviving are with niche things. And that starts with restaurants. It starts with entertainment venues. And then you'll start to see little retailers popping up, art galleries. We've got Branded in Butler now, on Main Street. Little retailers like that are offering something unique that you're not going to find at a big box store.
Yeah.
But it almost always starts with arts and entertainment.
Absolutely. Bill Atkinson with us. He has Chop Shop. I want to say Dr. Seuss's Catering, but the catering comes out of the Chop Shop.
Yeah.
So we just call it the Chop Shop now. And so if you want catering, of course, you can call the Chop Shop and contact Bill and get all that arranged. I brought you here to talk about holidays, so I better talk about holidays. I'm getting the time sign here going, okay, we got only about 50 minutes left. All right, so Bill, let me switch a little bit on you, and let's talk a little bit about holidays. And one thing I do want to bring up, and we just talked about this morning, Kate and I, with Coffee with Kate, when she was in and I was subbing for Dave this morning. She brought to my attention this 141-year-old fruitcake from a family that's keeping this from, I don't know, is it great-great-great, maybe another great-grandma? I don't know. So it has been all over the news, so it's not just one place. We got it off the Associated Press, but I've seen it on many news outlets, so it's not just a one-time thing. How and why? I know it's not your family, Bill, but...
I don't know why. It doesn't make sense to me.
Does it preserve that long?
So my only guess is, since all of the fruit in there is dried, that the moisture content was so low in the fruit that it had a hard time attracting bacteria. Uh-huh. And the other thing way back when, because this is 141 years ago,
yeah,
we didn't have refrigeration. You know, you had ice boxes, things like that. So the way you would actually preserve a fruitcake, like way back then,
mm-hmm.
is you would take cheesecloth and you would soak it in brandy.
Okay.
And then you would wrap it around, you know, the fruitcake or whatever, because the alcohol content would keep bacteria from being attracted to it. So my guess is that thing has probably had so much brandy soaked into it over the years that it's pretty much preserved itself. Like, you know,
hard as a rock. I mean, that thing has to be hard as a rock now.
I mean, it's like the Keith Richards of fruitcakes.
I can't imagine this fruit. Keith Richards still looks good, I must say. But this fruitcake doesn't look like a fruitcake. It looks like a brown, I don't say lump. It is in the shape of fruitcake, but it's darkened a little bit.
Like, yeah. I definitely wouldn't be taking a bite out of it. But, I mean, it is amazing. I can't believe that it hasn't actually grown a lot of mold on it.
And they keep it in glass.
Yeah.
I mean, in the picture, she took it out of the glass.
But, yeah, but it's not like it's airtight. That's
right. So if you're baffled, then I don't feel so bad. Because Kate and I were baffled at how this thing.
That's the only thing I can come up with, is that it has so much brandy soaked into it that nothing will grow.
Wow. How much alcohol did they lose in that?
I'd be curious what it smelled like when they lift that glass off of there to see.
All right, so Bill, give me a recipe. Give me what I could make for the holidays. That one, I'd love to hear what you make, because you make such great meals. And then can you tell me something that I can make to get through this?
The thing that I actually make for my family a lot, and this is, my dad asks for this every year. We have a running joke that I kind of asked whenever I was growing up, why do we have ham for everything?
Right. Yeah. Yeah. You know? Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Every time the family is together, we have ham. And I was just getting really tired of having ham all the time. So, one year for Christmas, and whenever I started cooking for holidays, I decided we weren't going to have ham. I was going to go. It was one of the other traditional things that you have at Christmas time is usually like a roast beef.
Mm-hmm.
So I started doing a prime rib roast for Christmas. And that sounds a little bit intimidating, but it's one of the easiest things that I make.
Really?
It is. All you have to really do, if you go to farm market or wherever you buy your meat, ask them if they'll trim it for you so that, you know, it takes the fat cap off of it. You just really need to season it and slow roast it. Like, that's it.
Okay.
There's not a whole lot of work in it.
But when you say just season it, what does that mean to you? Because to me, I shake something on it. But are there dry? Do you do dry? Do you do wet? What do you do with seasoning?
Usually, whenever I do it at home, I'll do a wet rub on it. So I'll take beef stock and I'll reduce it down to almost like Jell-O, and take that and smear it all over the prime rib, and then just season it with a little bit of pepper, some garlic, little bit of herbs, you know, thyme, rosemary,
mm-hmm.
a little bit of parsley maybe.
Mm-hmm.
And I pop it in the oven, let it hang out there at 250, 275 degrees for 3 hours.
See, that's why I love talking to you, because you're just so nonchalant, because you do this all the time and you do a great job. I've stopped it. Okay, what do I do now?
but that's the thing.
Like, wait, what was that? Okay, like, stock.
cooking can be very overwhelming.
It can be, because I think there's a science to it, isn't it?
Well, you look at it in terms of ingredients and just amount of time that it might mm-hmm. take to get something from start to finish, and that can be overwhelming to you. But realistically, all you're doing is applying heat and time to something to get a result.
But why does it take a different amount of time, we'll say, with meat? And correct me if I'm wrong, some meat are slow cooked,
mm-hmm.
some meat, like steak, you got to have that thing hot and short time.
Yeah, it depends on the cut. And where it comes out of the animal. If you're dealing with something out of what they call the tender section of a cow, which mm-hmm. is your sirloins, your T-bones, your fillets, those can be quick, high-heat cooking methods because there's not a lot of connective tissue in them.
Oh, okay.
And they're not as developed muscles. So things that are coming out of the shoulders or the back legs of an animal, those are more developed, so they have more connective tissue. Makes them harder to cook They need slower cooking times, you know, combination cooking methods of like braising, stewing, so that you can break down that connective tissue. If you don't get that connective tissue broke down, then that's when you get something chewy. That's when you think something might be gristly.
Okay.
So it just really depends on where it's coming out of the animal.
All right. So back to holidays for a moment. So you cook beef or meat.
Yep.
In order to do that, anything in the way of a side dish or anything that's just, in my eyes, extravagant to you, it may be something second nature, but.
No, I keep everything pretty simple. Mashed potatoes,
mm-hmm.
You know. That's where most people go wrong with their mashed potatoes. They tend to not heat their cream whenever they go to actually whip their potatoes.
Interesting. So, now, when you say cream, you're talking milk, half and half?
Heavy cream. Yeah, I use heavy cream for the fat content. Adds richness. You can use milk. You can use half and half. Any of them will work. But I typically go with heavy cream for the fat content.
Okay.
But you have to remember you're dealing with a starch. So you've heated up this starch to the point where you can mash it. Well, starches only absorb liquids at 180 degrees or higher. So if you have a hot potato and you throw cold cream into it, you're shocking the potato and it can't absorb the cream, and then your potatoes get lumpy.
Are you shocking the potato where it won't continue to heat? Because I've heard some food, and I know you would be able to explain which foods, and that's not necessarily where I'm going right now, but some foods, as soon as you put that cold water on,
right,
it stops the cooking process.
Yeah, no, it won't completely stop it because there's too much heat in the potatoes.
Okay.
And the ratio of cream that you're putting into the potatoes isn't enough to completely stop it, but it will slow the absorption, and it'll make the starch in the potato sticky again in spots, and that's how you end up with lumpy potatoes.
So when we're heating the cream, should we heat it to 180? Do we have to just
heat it to a boil and then shut it off?
Oh, to a boil? Okay.
Yep.
Okay. Interesting. See, and those are the fine details, and I know I've been joking about it, but those are the fine details that make the difference between something really turning out like a professional like you, and then when we're at home and things go wrong, we just don't understand why.
Yeah, but it's just a matter of not having the reference, you know?
Right.
There's nothing that I do at the shop that you can't do at home. You know,
it's just we don't know how to do it at home.
Right. It's just
exactly.
The little detail stuff that you don't see every day, or you don't have somebody that knows the ins and outs of that to explain it to you. But
so with your mashed potatoes, are you just doing cream, or do you do the butter as well?
No, I do butter, cream, a little bit of sour cream, salt, pepper. I keep those pretty basic.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
I joke, it's funny that I cook for a living because growing up, my family were not adventurous eaters at all. You know, we ate everything, was pretty much well done. And you know,
I would not have guessed that coming into your restaurant.
But
Because coming into the Chop Shop, you're looking at a menu that is unique, although they're familiar items. We were talking about that off the air. It's not like they're totally outlandish. It's just the way you put them together, it's just in a unique style that it just, I don't know, it's attractive to be able to come back and continue eating at the Chop Shop.
It keeps things interesting.
Yeah,
you know,
it does.
That's the big thing that you kind of got to remember when you are eating or throwing a party.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it needs to be interesting. So,
talk about what makes a good dinner party.
Well, I've been thinking about this because I actually don't throw a lot of parties, believe it or not.
You cater for them.
I'm pretty low key. But we do throw one every year for the Chop Shop staff. So I'm going to walk you through how we come up with what to do with the Chop Shop staff. So we need basically five things to make a party, right? So you got to have friends.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if you don't have friends, you're having an imaginary friend party.
You're having a Hallmark Christmas
party. And that better
be
in a padded room.
Right?
You know? that's bad news. So you got to have friends. If you're the person who's responsible for planning the party, you also have to remember that this party is not a democracy, okay? You're not asking your friends when they get there, hey, what do you guys want to do? Because everybody's going to be real bored real fast.
Okay.
You know, if you want people to come, you've got to have it planned out so that when they get there, they're having fun.
Okay. All right.
First thing, you got to have friends, and party is not a democracy.
Okay. Party is not a democracy. You're going to have that on a bumper sticker, I think.
So, second thing you have to have, you got to have music.
Okay.
You know? There has to be background noise. So I go through, and this is where you might have to involve somebody else in the planning of your playlist, because if you're into nu metal and that's it, and that's all you're playing on your playlist, your party's going to be over real fast. So you have to kind of have a good mix of different things. Take into consideration what's the target age group that are attending your party.
Something appropriate, yes.
And then you kind of have to plan your playlist out, so it's kind of like a bell curve. You need something that's kind of like, this is fun, and it's, you know, all right, we're at the party, and then as, you know, people get there and they start having fun, it needs to be something
more.
The
intensity grows.
Yeah, and then, you know, it comes back down when everybody's kind of getting
ready
relaxed
to go home.
And ready
okay,
to go.
All right.
So I like to make playlists that focus on specific time periods. So if I know that everybody that's coming to the party is, you know, in their 30s or 40s, I'm going through, like, the most obscure 80s music that, you know, they were big hits, but now nobody remembers them. Stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
And that'll be the beginning of my playlist. And then it'll go into something like 90s pop music.
Okay.
That then everybody starts laughing because they remember when they were in high school. That
it becomes more current as you go through the night.
It becomes more current. However, there are exceptions. So every playlist, no matter what it is, should have, you know, Eddie Murphy and Party All the Time on it. I mean, you can't have a party without that song. You know, stuff like that. So we got friends, we've got music. You also have to have party activities.
Right, right.
So this is where the Chop Shop, you know, this is the part that I usually, if Lindsay and I are,
we'll just say unique,
figuring out what to do for the party.
It's unique, yeah.
This is usually the part that I handle. So, you know, you have to have your party activities. Everybody needs to be, you know, having fun. Even if people don't want to do the party activities, they need to be fun for those people to watch.
Okay, yeah.
So,
yeah.
You know, we like to throw sharp objects. You know,
okay.
We throw axes, knives. You know, it's a good time.
And axe throwing right now is a thing.
It is.
I mean,
it's a lot of fun.
A safe environment. So, but it kind of fits what you do because you're cooking.
Yeah,
do you have a target?
We're going to make one for the parking lot.
Okay.
Yeah, after we went last year, everybody decided that would be a good thing to have down in the parking lot behind the Chop Shop so they could go down and relieve some stress sometimes.
So you got activity.
Yeah, we got activities.
You got the music. And then what do you do for the food?
That's where, for Chop Shop parties, I try to find something that everybody doesn't eat all the time.
Okay.
You know? So if we're having a party for the staff, we're not having Chop Shop food. I mean, you can eat that every day when you're working.
Right, yeah.
So I try to make things there that we don't have at the Chop Shop. So personally, I make tacos a lot. You know, and you're thinking tacos at Christmas? Hey, it's Christmas in Mexico, too.
It is. But again, I mean, the Chop Shop is a restaurant. You're surrounded by food. It's. I mean, I've worked in eateries before, and you see the same food. It is good food. It's just you don't want to eat it when you're off.
Yeah, you're tired
of it. Yeah. So you want to eat something different. So even if somebody's holding a dinner party, think maybe items that they don't get to eat every day.
Yeah, and the other thing, you have to kind of, this goes back into what kind of party is it? So if it's, you know, like our Chop Shop party, mm-hmm. we're going to be up moving around, doing things, mingling, having activities. The food needs to match that. So finger foods, stuff that's not greasy, that you can walk around, you can eat, not make a mess. So tacos are great for that. You know, you get
so
some sit-down soft tacos
parties and, would be more of a different atmosphere.
Right. If you're having a more formal party, well, then yeah, you know,
right.
then but, we've got, you know, multiple courses and things like that.
Right,
but
right.
That's where you have to kind of decide what kind
but
of party
you're up
you
and
have
mobile, it. Yeah. If you're up and mobile, it's going to be a whole different party.
So yeah,
absolutely.
Then the last thing you have to have, you know, if you have food, you have to have beverages. So you have to always plenty of beer. You know, plan for the majority, not the minority.
Okay.
So, you know, play it safe, you know, Yingling, Miller Lite, stuff like that.
Your favorites, right?
You're going to have, you know, your buddies that like craft beer.
Right, right.
Have a few things there for them. They're probably more than likely going to bring some stuff to share, too. So plan for the majority. You know, if you're going to do anything with cocktails, simple, you know, a simple two-step cocktail that you can put in a beverage pitcher that people can self-serve. You know, you don't want to have anybody tied up behind the bar during your party.
You don't. You know, and that's why I'm glad that you're talking about this today. And I know we only have a couple minutes left with you, Bill, but because when we think about parties, I don't think we think about all of that. You know, some people are really great hosts and hostesses, yeah. and they can do that very well. And then some of us who try our best, you know, we do our best, but we don't think about all those elements and what they mean to a party for people to walk away and say, wow, we can't wait to do that next year.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, the big thing is everybody has to have fun.
Right.
So if you can go through and identify the areas that would take people away from the fun and then try to find solutions to not do that.
Right.
That, you know, it's actually pretty right. simple when you think about
yeah,
it.
Yeah, absolutely. Bill Adkinson, the Chop Shop, of course, on Main Street. I'd like to come to your party and throw knives. That'd be quite interesting, but we'll let you guys have at it. But hey, thanks so much for coming in. It was nice to talk to you today.
Me.
And since you came in, just want to mention, folks, if you want the catering, call Bill at Chop Shop, and you know they'll take care of you with what you need. But have a great holiday.
Thanks, Tracy.
Into the new year. After the new year hits, you can take a breath for a moment,
we'll
right?
Take a little break.
Quite busy.
That's when we'll have our party, actually. Yeah. We always have it in January after everything.
When
calms
you can
down.
Enjoy it.
Yeah. We don't want the staff stressing to get to a party.
Absolutely. So. And that might be a good idea for some people, too. Just have it a couple days after, you know, everything is the rush is gone. But all right, Bill, we got to get going.
All right.
Thank you so much.
Yep, thanks,
folks,
Tracy.
We are going to take a break. I'm Tracy Morgan in for Dave Mullarkey. When we come back, we're going to be talking, we're going to switch topics altogether and talk about the Catholic Diocese of Pittsburgh in their latest announcement that they made this week about the merging parishes. That will happen in January. Butler's not a part of that yet, but we will discuss Butler and all of that, too. So we'll be back in just a moment with Bishop David Zubik and also Linda Ritzer from the Catholic Diocese of Pittsburgh right after this.
Hop the bus. Leave the driving up to us.
The bus.
We're going your way. Getting there starts here. Just hop the bus. Easy and economical. Just hop the bus. No car, no problem, the bus will get you there. Cause that's what we do.
Hop the bus,
leave the driving up to us.
The bus,
we're going your way.
In 2019, Tri-Rivers celebrates 25 years as your Butler neighbor, providing exceptional musculoskeletal care in the community.
I'm Dr. Scott Rainey, an orthopedic back and neck surgeon at Tri-Rivers. Whether I'm in the office treating patients for conditions such as cervical or lumbar stenosis, or in the operating room performing innovative procedures like disc replacements, I'm proud to care for patients in the Butler community. To learn more or to schedule an appointment, visit TriRiversMSK.com or call 1-866-874-7483.
Hi, this is Howie Pinckney with Pinckney Capital Management in Portersville. Today, many people need help managing their investments. The investment options available today can be confusing. If you would like to talk to someone for help, why not call me for an appointment? Howie Pinckney at Pinckney Capital Management, 1284 Perry Highway, Portersville, Pennsylvania. My telephone number is 724-368-4224. Securities and advisory services offered through Commonwealth Financial Network. Member FINRA, SIPC, a registered investment advisor.
Like it or not, winter is coming. Not to worry, West End Tire and Service has over 400 snow tires in stock for cars and light-duty trucks. They also sell tires for large trucks, trailers, heavy equipment, skid loaders, backhoes, and more. With a vast selection of Cooper tires, West End Tire and Service prides itself on offering the same great installation and service as Siemens provided for years. Plus, they have the same great staff, too. Call 724-287-6973 or stop by West End Tire Service today, West Cunningham Street in Butler.
Thinking about remodeling or refinancing your home? Armco Credit Union's new HELOC combines the flexibility of a traditional home equity line of credit with the low fixed rate of a home equity loan. Lock in different amounts, rates, and terms up to 20 years under one convenient loan agreement and monthly payment without the hassle of reapplying as your borrowing needs change. It's never been easier to join. So call or visit us at one of our locations or online at armcocu.com to become a member. Armco Credit Union is an equal housing lender and is federally insured by NCUA.
Welcome back to It's Your Turn. Tracy Morgan in for Dave Mullarkey. And we are going to spend a couple of minutes today talking about the Catholic Church right now in Western Pennsylvania. Of course, you got the diocese in Pittsburgh. And with me today is Bishop David Zubik and also Linda Ritzer. And what we're going to talk about is about the latest information of merged churches, merged parishes in the Pittsburgh area. And now Butler is not on the list at this time, but I still think it's worthy of the conversation to be able to talk with the Bishop and Linda. Bishop Zubik, thank you very much for joining me. I appreciate it.
Glad to be with you, Tracy, and with all of your listeners.
And Linda Ritzert, thank you so much. You're the program coordinator of all of this, aren't you? Thank you for your time.
Yes, Tracy, happy to be here. Thank you.
So let me first ask you if you can give us an update on the latest move on the merged parishes, because it doesn't include Butler at this time, but still, I would like to hear from you. What's the update on the 26 parishes that have merged together?
Well, this is a process that has been in place for the course of the last 5 to 6 years. Once we began the implementation, which occurred last October, October the 15th of 2018, we're going in various stages, so that we started off the process on the 18th of October with 188 parishes. We had six new parishes established on July 1st of this year, which brought us to 170 parishes. And now the number of parishes that were announced over the weekend forming eight new parishes will bring us down to 152 parishes once they're established at the beginning of January of 2020. We began this whole process primarily to help people come to a deeper experience of Jesus by coming to help pull together faith communities in geographic areas so there could be better use of personnel, but more importantly that people could come together within the context of a much more lively worship experience and come to see that the church is meant to really draw people together, to bring people to a closer experience not only of worship but of lived experience of their own faith. And those things obviously are channeled by a lot of the demographic changes that are happening in the area, by taking a look at the ways in which greater service can be done by people joined together in new parishes, as I've already said, that worship can in fact be a more lively experience as well too. So that's where we are as at the beginning of January of 2020, that we'll have 152 parishes where we started off with 188. But we're moving down the line so that, you know, all of the parishes will be included in this whole reorganization by 2023.
So by 2023, do you have any idea when Butler will see those merges? Because right now we're in a grouping situation, but we haven't merged, and churches here haven't closed technically. Do you have any idea when Butler will see those merges?
I'm going to let Linda answer that because she has all of those things at her fingertips, and she can give you the accurate response to that.
Okay, thank you. Linda?
Sure, Tracy. So first of all, we do work individually with each one of our pastors and administrators for the timing of their merger, because we like for them to really work with the faithful and the needs of their particular community. Right now, the Butler parishes like Butler City would be targeted sometime for 2021. Again, we're not exactly sure what month. We do the mergers in January and July, and so we'll be working closely with the administrators in that region to allow them to make the selection of a date that would be best accommodate the needs of the faithful there.
Any reason why January and July in particular?
Well, January and July are really year-end and then fiscal year-end. So we have a lot of internal work that we have to do to organize for specific things like insurance and payroll, and we want to make sure that everything is taken care of correctly that way. We work with our financial services operation to ensure a smooth transition. And so we need the 6 months to be able to do all of the internal work.
Sure. And I do appreciate, on behalf of Butler Radio, the information being passed along to the media. But how does the information get to the parishioners? Is it in-house first and then it comes to the media? Or will folks here in the Butler area hear it through us?
No, I think our commitment has always been that parishioners hear it first from their priests. And so, for example, this past weekend, you know, we know that the earliest time that parishes can have a Saturday evening Mass is at 4 o'clock. And so we do our release of our press release within an hour after that 4 o'clock Mass time, because we do want people to be able to hear it directly from the priests who serve their parish.
One of the goals of the diocese was to share resources, and I'm wondering what you have seen. Is it positive? Have you reached those goals in trying to reach the shared resources that you set out to do in the first place?
One of the things that's clear at this particular point is that at this point no church buildings are closing. But if we take a look and see the parishes that came together on July 1st, so once again that was 188 parishes became six new parishes that brought us down to 170 parishes, we can see a great deal of cooperative effort. I'll cite you an example of a place that's pretty close to Butler. The number of parishes that were up in Newcastle formed into one brand new parish called Holy Spirit Parish. And maybe 10 years ago, you know, there might have been more of a turf protection on the part of the parishes in Newcastle. What I saw when I went up there for the installation of Father McCaffrey as the new pastor and the beginning of the new parish, there was a great deal of excitement. People were seeing how they could really come together, share their own experience of church with each other, and what's happening, you know, since then has been a remarkable experience. Maybe I'll let Linda get a little bit more specific about some of the things that are happening there.
Linda, would you like to add?
I sure would. I recently had the opportunity to meet with the pastoral and finance councils of the newly formed parish there, and one of the things that we were looking at were all of the ministries that have begun to come together and how excited they were. For example, their ladies and their women's guild and the social outreach that they are giving to those who are in need in Lawrence County, and the vision that Father McCaffrey has to really look at how can they better serve all those who have particular needs, as well as their faith formation program really solidified, and it's so exciting what they're doing with their youth and their youth ministry. And all of this is because there's a common leadership team that is helping all of the volunteers to be empowered to take their rightful work as the baptized in serving the church.
Linda Richard with us, also Bishop David Zupik with us, the Catholic Diocese of Pittsburgh, just talking about their latest information about 26 parishes that are a part of this portion of the merging that has been happening, will happen as we go into the upcoming years. Butler, not on the list at this point, but again, that is still in discussions, as we just mentioned a minute ago. Now, as you're talking, Linda, about finances, where is the diocese financially? And I ask that not to pick on the diocese, not to pick on the church, but any business has to look at finances, no matter if you're nonprofit or for-profit. And so every organization would have to make changes, in part because of finances. But when you start seeing churches merging, a lot of individuals will start talking finances and how bad off are we. And so where is the diocese financially right now?
If I could chime in on that, I think part of the reason why we are doing this is to make sure that you have better stewardship. You know, so the fact of it is that, you know, when in Newcastle, before they merged and came together, they might have, each of the existing parishes would have had staff members to cover things like religious education or to cover secretarial work. And I think that what we're looking at here is to become better stewards of the resources that are there so that we can more appropriately use parish money for things that will support the building up of the faith.
Bishop, I'm glad that you mentioned that, and I kind of want to transition into my next question with that, because I've had the conversation with folks in other faiths, not just the Catholic faith, but it's the topic of the lack of individuals who are pastors or priests. There are less and less or fewer and fewer religious leaders to be able to attend to the parishioners and to be able to lead the opportunity for services. Do you find that to be the same in the Catholic faith? And how is that affecting decisions moving forward?
Well, obviously, it is a matter of major concern. One of the things that you can see in terms of the Diocese of Pittsburgh is that some of the largest ordination classes, which occurred in the early part of the 1970s, all of those priests are at the point of where they're retiring. And while we feel very blessed to have the number of men who are in our seminary program, we have 29 men in our seminary program, that doesn't compare to the 100 students that we had in the seminary program back in the late 60s and the early 1970s. You know, it's clear there are a number of different factors, a lot of complexities here. I think that, you know, people aren't as involved in organized religion on all fronts, not only the Catholic Church and not only Christian churches, but even our Jewish brothers and sisters. And, you know, I think part of that is as a result of a greater secularization of society. I think also population has decreased, and we certainly see that in southwestern Pennsylvania. But what we're trying to do is be able to take a look at our resources, and especially our personal resources, that we can, in fact, use the talents of all parish staff, starting with the priests and deacons, in a way that it can really help to build up the faith. And I use that word evangelization, and that's exactly what's meant by the word evangelization, to really spread the faith and help people to become excited about their faith. And that couples in with a number of the demographic factors that I've just made some reference to.
And I'm wondering also about this point as well, because I, for another reason on the side, a side business that I have, I'm holding something in January for pastors, talking about pastors in depression. The reason I'm bringing that up is I'm just curious about your opinion on this. I don't think we, whether you're Catholic or of a different faith, we realize what you all go through. You know, the weight that is on your shoulders, all of the activity that you take care of as religious leaders. And I was reading stats that say like 90% of pastors feel fatigued every week and 80% aren't in the ministry 10 years later after they begin. So do you find that pastors, just with the weight of what they deal with, and priests, what they deal with, it can cause a lot of stress that's hard to handle sometimes? It's like a silent struggle.
Well, I'm so glad that you're sensitive to that, because that in fact is true, and that's another one of the reasons why we're doing the reorganization, so that you know, our pastors aren't tending to a multiple number of parishes when they can work with one particular parish. Plus, also, it's so important that we can continue to encourage very competent lay leadership in the church as well, to help the pastor to be able to do the work that he needs to do for his people.
Linda, I want to turn to you, if I could, for another question, because, again, we're talking about the 26 parishes that merger, the latest information with the mergers that have been happening with the Catholic Diocese of Pittsburgh. And I'm wondering, how long is the time frame that you give to determine if a merger is successful, or will you still be giving it time to see if you have to make an additional move upon the mergers that you've already made?
Great question. And I would just say that what we're learning from the parishes that merged very early on in our process is that with time, they are becoming stronger, they are becoming more unified, and they are really creating a new identity that's giving them a sense of hope and direction. So what we know is that it takes time to create new relationships and to create a new identity. But with the leadership of the pastor and the clergy team and the lay leaders on the advisory councils, as well as all the faithful, there is a growth and there is a real sense of joy and excitement about what these new parishes can become.
I do want to ask a question. I know, Bishop, I heard you a couple of minutes ago say no churches have closed down, but when a church building closes, what happens to it? What process do you take in order to continue its use or not continue its use? And Linda, I'm not sure if you could add anything in here as well on, can other people use that church after the building does close?
Church buildings are used for a number of different functions. I think that, the first of all, I think in terms of, you know, what buildings will be used and what buildings won't be used, you know, every single one of the groupings of parishes will give input into what is going to best meet their particular needs. And then whenever, you know, the decision has been made and I have to give approval for a church building to be closed, the decree is, in fact, presented in that regard, then if the building is not going to be used for sacred purposes, then all the sacred objects are taken out of it, you know, it would be relegated to secular use based on how a parish may want to be able to sell a church building to another entity.
I want to ask both of you my final question. Linda, I'm going to start with you, and I'll finish up with you, Bishop Zubik. Just on the fact that we love consistency. People, humans, love consistency in our lives. And when change comes, for a lot of people, that can be unsettling. It can be a challenge, and some people have a hard time with that. Doesn't mean that they don't participate, but it can be an emotional challenge for them. Linda, what do you say to individuals as these changes are happening? Maybe they're going to a different location, or maybe just different activity is happening, or maybe different times of the day, you know, operational hours have changed on them. What do you say to help them through that process?
Well, first, just to really acknowledge, like you say, Tracy, it is difficult to face some of these changes, and it's challenging. And really what I think is at the heart of it is that people have made relationships with each other in their parishes, and they've dedicated themselves to the faith together and growing together. So one of the fears is, will that continue? So we want to try to help people to understand, yes, these new parishes will give us the opportunity to be in touch with those we've been in touch with, and yet to make new relationships and strengthen us in new ways in our family of faith. And to then always, you know, with our leadership team, to say, what are we doing to make sure that our arms are always open? And know that people, even if they get upset initially, most of the people really do stay on board, and they're faithful. They want to be with their parish. They want to be with the Lord. And so how do we open ourselves up to making sure we're hospitable and welcoming people, even as they're facing these challenges?
Bishop David Zubik, same question.
And I think I'll take it a step further. I think Linda already provided the bridge. The focus has to be on who, in fact, is the foundation of our faith, and who, which is Jesus himself. And I oftentimes, when I'm asked that question, will use the example of my own personal journey. You know, I grew up in the little town of Ambridge, which is in Beaver County, and the church that I was baptized in, made my first confession, made my first communion, made my confirmation, the church from which I graduated, the church where I had my first mass as a priest and one of my first masses as a bishop, is no longer in existence. And obviously, there are a lot of memories that are attached to the building. But the reality of what's so important is to focus our attention on the reality of the very presence of Christ, who's the foundation of our faith. And I think that, you know, while change is difficult and memories are, in fact, dear, it's just important for us to recognize that Christ is with us wherever we are, and we need to be able to celebrate that presence, and especially do that with other people who share the same beliefs.
Bishop, I'm going to squeeze in one more question, because as you're talking, I'm thinking, can we look at changes like this as going through a grief process where, you know, we grieve and we feel that difference, but then we come out on the other side to continue our lives and to move forward?
Well, I think we can grieve change, but I think there's also something exciting that happens with change and the power of God's grace. You know, whenever changes happen in each of our lives, it's always important that we work with the Lord to see how they can help to better us, to help us to become holier people, and ultimately to help us become saints.
Linda Ritzert, Bishop David Zubik, of course, with the Catholic Diocese of Pittsburgh. Thank you so much for your time, both of you. I appreciate your time today.
God bless you. Thank you.
All right, we're going to take a break here in just a moment, and then we're going to be back, and we're going to get to close out the show together. Or do we just want to go ahead and close out the show? I'm looking at you, Pat. I'm closing it out? All right, let's just close it out. All right, Pat's going, no, just do it. So, all right, what Pat says goes. All right, so, hey, thank you very much for joining us today. For It's Your Turn, Tracy Morgan in for Dave. We'll do this all again tomorrow. Tomorrow we will have City Hall, of course, with City Council. I'm not exactly sure who will be in, if it's just the mayor or if a couple of city council members will be in. And then I'm planning on talking to an individual about the census as it's coming up here next year. What's it mean to us? I understand, I'll have to get the exact information off my guest tomorrow, that I think we were one of the lowest with the turnout of the census, and that can mean big things. And so we want to make sure that we get the details on that and get all that spelled out, and what we need to do as we go in, well, not into the new year, but when we get to the next year, what we have to do with that. All right. Pat, can I go now? Pat says yes, so I'm excused. All right. So, hey, have a great day. We'll talk to you again tomorrow morning. It's your turn. Tracy Morgan in for Dave Malarkey.
Escape the hustle and bustle and enjoy breakfast, lunch, or dinner at Michael's Restaurant. Meet at Michael's for a get-together with family and friends or on your way to or from the light show. And don't forget, every Friday night is prime rib night. Need a quick gift? Michael's Restaurant gift cards also make great stocking stuffers.
In today's fast-paced world, our lives get a whole lot easier when we trust experts. We trust people who know what they're doing. And when it comes to shipping, I trust Goin Postal Butler. They're right off Newcastle Road on Shockey Lane, right behind King's and Villa Grande restaurants. It's easy, too. I just cruise on back, go say hello to the friendly folks inside, and they package my items for shipping. And that saves me a whole lot of time. I'm trying to wrap my item, trying to find the right size box or the bubble wrap or the mailing labels. With Goin Postal Butler, I know they provide quality service. They've got great prices. Most importantly, they are trustworthy. So I know that my package will go where I need it to go. That's Goin Postal Butler, 140 Shockey Lane in the Shockey Mini Storage Complex, your friendly neighborhood shipping store, Goin Postal Butler.
That frightening sound is one we hear quite often throughout the day. Our heart quickens and immediately we wonder what happened. A medical emergency can be frightening, every tick of the clock crucial. And that's why Butler Ambulance Service is dedicated to be there with every ounce of care possible. Butler Ambulance Service is within minutes of providing you or a loved one with treatment and transportation. Call 282-9595 to find out more. Butler Ambulance Service is a phone call away from serving you.
Holiday season has made its way to Osterling's Lawn and Garden. They have plenty of supplies to get you ready for the holidays. Stock up on gift certificates, gift baskets, tree ornaments, and holiday cards. Osterling's has warm winter scented candles, hats, gloves, sleds, and even toy stockings for your pets. Be prepared for the holiday and winter season with all the essentials from Osterling's Lawn and Garden, where they'll have everything you'll need at a great price.
Tobacco for Less is perfect if you like to think big. Tobacco for Less is Western Pennsylvania's largest glass emporium, which has hundreds of glass pipes, a custom walk-in humidor stocked with a huge selection of cigars, and a 19-foot vape juice bar. They're always stocked with standard tobacco products, and their health and wellness department maintains a wide selection of CBD products. Tobacco for Less is always expanding and adding to their product lines. Be sure to check out their Sharon location that has just added a large health and wellness department. Stop by one of their locations in Butler, Sharon, or Aliquippa for all your smoking and vaping needs.
And happy holidays from Tobacco for Less.
A special message at Christmas and holiday time from the good folks at the Society of St. Vincent de Paul here in Butler. They would not only like to wish you and yours a very, very merry and holy Christmas and a happy new year, but also to say thanks. Thank you, thank you, thank you for all of those who have supported them in their efforts during the past year. Thanks to those of you who donated to the Society of St. Vincent de Paul thrift store, to those of you who patronized the thrift store. All the proceeds there go to help fund the food cupboard and the client aid program. And thanks to those of you who donated provisions to the food cupboard throughout the year. And thanks to those of you, too, who donated extra produce from your garden during the harvest season to the Society of St. Vincent de Paul food cupboard. Thank you so much. And Merry Christmas and Happy New Year to all of you and yours from the Society of St. Vincent de Paul in Butler.
Thanks for joining us for today's edition of It's Your Turn with Dave Malarkey here on WISR 680 AM. Today's broadcast is also archived for you online at WISR680.com. Tune in again next time for Dave Malarkey's It's Your Turn, weekdays from 12:30 to 1:30, right here on WISR 680.
Christmas bells in the steeple, ringing out on Christmas